Chapter 1. The apocalypse had hit hard and quick, like a landslide. Phil's been around the world a few times. He's seen some shit, seen devastation and poverty and destruction more than once. All of it, and he means all of it, couldn't hold a candle to the state of the world as it stands now. Houses abandoned, dead roaming the streets, cities in shambles. Phil doesn't go into the cities anymore. Once had been enough, and he doesn't have a death wish. He chooses only to watch them in the distance, or pass by them from time to time as he walks. The buildings loom in the distance, their once shining rooftops now overgrown and dull, with no one to take care of them. If you get close enough, you smell the stench of rot and death. It's a smell that you can never get out of your nose. Discovered one night after the initial wave, where Phil tried desperately to scrub out his nose, sticking cloth and then even fingers up as far as he could to try and wash the smell out of his sinuses. It didn't work, and the smell had stayed with him since. He tries to look past it, to look past the cities, and continue walking forward. That's what he attributes his survival to, really. The ability to look past everything, stare the dead in the eyes, and still walk on after he's shot them in the head. They were people once, but thinking about it too much makes his hands start to shake, so Phil looks past it, and walks on. He's not really sure where he is, which is why he's exposed himself now. Roads are usually dangerous and not worth the time. Most of the cars too wrecked and grown over to be able to drive. Finding gas is another problem altogether, and they're loud, so it's not really worth it. But road signs are like maps and indicators of where the hell he is, so he shoves down the nervous feeling in his gut and steps out onto the cracked asphalt. The paint is faded below his feet as he follows the white line, glancing up and trying to find a sign quickly. There's one up ahead, pale blue against the green of the trees he'd come from, so he heads that way. He gets just close enough to make out the words that have faded a bit and been graffitied over. Streetly Luton, a little too close to London for comfort. When there's a shout from behind him, and then the sound of some sort of weapon firing, Phil drops. It wasn't a gunshot, but there's another twang of string and wood, and if he didn't know any better, he would say compound bow just from the sound alone. He's on the ground, knelt against the hot shell of some car, pushing his back and pack up against the metal as he scans the area around him for the source of the sound. There's more noise, the groan of the dead, and another shout. No, a whoop. Whatever it is, it sounds almost like they're having fun. Another voice joins in, too loud for Phil's personal preference, and a dull thump as projectile meets flesh. The whoops turn celebratory, so he risks a peek above the metal and broken glass. Almost instantaneously, like it was drawn by the sounds of stupid people, one of the deadwalkers sits up from its hibernation spot right in front of him. He scrambles backwards, hands reaching and gripping his shotgun without hesitation. It slips off his shoulder and into his hands and he fires, the bang echoing across the street. Voices cut off, and suddenly there's two shapes popping up from behind the cars, and more clicking sounds. Of course that woke up whatever other hibernating monsters were around, sleeping in the cars to avoid the sun and elements as they waited for people to infect. There's motion in the corner of his eye, and Phil swings around, taking another deadwalker before it can crawl out of the car it had been hiding in. Shit! One of the voices, the louder one he'd heard first, now sounded panicked and rushed. Before he can react, the two shapes from before are barreling his way. It's only due to the fact that he's out of shells that he doesn't immediately shoot at them, fingers moving to reload his gun as he steps backwards toward the tree line. The two shapes moving toward him, very alive, very much alive, seem to be children. The taller of the two, the blonde, is holding a crossbow in his hands and reloading it as he goes. The smaller brunette has an axe across his back, dirt smeared across his face as he hops over the hood of a car and blinks in surprise at Phil's presence. Go, 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 the taller one shouts, and Phil doesn't hesitate to agree. Go, 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 away from the road and the ominous clicking sounds that often come before near-death situations. The two boys blast past him and into the trees, and Phil is hot on their heels without a second thought. The tree line is close, and they make it in seconds, pushing into the brush and ignoring the sting of small branches on his cheeks as he runs. He keeps the two boys in his line of sight as he goes, the crunching of their feet and breathing being the only sounds now, and the clicking. There's an unearthly scream from behind him and slightly to the right, so Phil reaches out one hand and grabs a young tree, readies his rifle against his hip, then uses his momentum to swing around and fire. The deadwalker jolts, arm flying back as a spatter of rot and congealed blood flies from it, but it doesn't slow. Phil fires again, this time with better aim, and it goes down. He turns and keeps running, heart pounding in his chest in time with the thuds of his feet against the forest floor. They don't slow down for a while. Both boys are ahead of him, and Phil can't seem to catch up, keeping his eyes ahead and ears behind as he listens for any monster that might have been able to keep up. Thankfully, the clicking fades into the distance, and sooner than later, all that's left is the quiet sound of birds, their own panting, and the rustle of leaves under their feet. His rifle is still in his hands when they eventually stop, a small brook causing the blonde kid to swear viciously when he steps right in and soaks his foot. Phil can't find it in himself to laugh, but the brunette doesn't hesitate, cackling at his friend's situation. "You're so stupid," he says, leaning forward against his knees as he tries to catch his breath while laughing at the same time. "I told you to watch where you're going." "I was," the blonde argues, shaking out his foot and grimacing when it squelches. "I was trying to see if you were behind me, you bitch." The brunette laughs again, plopping down onto a rock, and, still grinning, looks right at Phil. The grin drops from his face, like he just remembered there was someone else in the immediate vicinity. Phil's still catching his breath, leaning against a tree, but he doesn't miss how the kid's fingers twitch toward the handle at his hip and the axe there. To soothe, he holds his hands out, palms facing the two. The blonde's gone all stormy as well, eyebrows scrunched together as he stares at Phil, wet foot apparently forgotten. "Right," says the blonde, tugging out a crossbow bolt from the pouch on his hip and settling it into place on his weapon. "The dumbass who shot the gun. You're the one who was yelling," Phil points out, letting his hands drop but not relaxing. "And waking up all the shitheads who were sleeping in the cars. I wouldn't have had to shoot if there hadn't been a fucking zombie in my face." "Touché," says the brunette, and it earns him a glare from the other. "Are you by yourselves?" Phil asks, because it seems to be only them around now. He'd run across a few other survivors while walking, but none of them had been very friendly. It seems like the general rule of survival for the apocalypse. If you're on your own, it's easier. Being antisocial just helps with the fact. "Just us," the brunette says, cutting off the blonde by a few seconds, judging on how he'd opened his mouth only to snap it shut and glare. "We came by Aylesbury, heading north now. Tommy said it'll be easier out where there's less people." "Tubbo!" The blonde, Tommy presumably, whips his head to face the other and glares harder than he had ever before. Phil stood there in no small amount of shock, really, as he watched the two start to argue. They go back and forth easily, seemingly having forgotten about him standing there as they debate over what to tell the strange guy in the woods or not. After a minute or two of listening to them getting louder and louder, he steps forward and shakes a hand in their direction. "Whoa, whoa, whoa," he says, catching both of their attention again, and not flinching when they both go for their weapons. While he doesn't doubt they're both good with them, he also sort of figures they won't fire. "Enough with it. North is smart. I came from there. But there's still a lot in between. How far have you come by yourself?" Both of the boys look uncomfortable when he asks, and it figures. Of course they hadn't survived all on their own. Someone else must have been with them up until recently. He watches them share a glance, then the brown-haired one speaks up again. "Tubbo, if Phil had caught his name right. Couple towns by ourself," he says, earning a jab just above the ear from Tommy. "Before that, not far." "Tubbo, shut up," Tommy hisses, and gives Phil a wary look. Not for the first time, he realizes he's the outsider here. Again, he raises his hands in a pacifying way and takes a couple steps back. "It's all right. I'm not going to pry," he says, glancing behind them all and lowering his hands. He doesn't hear or see anything, and they'd run for quite a while. Fairly sure they're safe, he moves to sit at the base of the tree once more and takes off his bag. "Just wondering how you two survived with instincts like that." "I have great instincts, fuck you," Tommy says, and Phil rolls his eyes, pressing his back to the tree and sliding down until he's sitting. Fuck. He's gotten into better shape since the world went to shit, but a run like that still takes a lot out of him. Add the come down from the adrenaline rush on top of it, and he's prone to shaking fingers. He ignores them, digging into his backpack for the water bottle there. The creek's gurgling, and he eyes it carefully before downing the rest of what's in his bottle. The brunette, Tubbo, seems to have the same idea and turns, dipping his fingers into the water. "What's your name?" he asks, and Phil wipes at his mouth with the back of his hand. "Phil," he says honestly. "I'm assuming you're Tubbo, and Tommy, was it?" "My name's actually Toby. Tommy won't use it, though." "Fuck you, Tubbo's way cooler." They bicker back and forth for a minute, and Phil's slowly starting to realize that's probably commonplace for them. He takes a moment to think, pressing his head back against the rough bark of the tree, staring up at the glimpse of the sky he can catch through the leaves. It's nice to hear human voices again, even if they're swearing and cursing and so incredibly young. Maybe the youth makes it better, but then he remembers what world they're living in, and maybe it doesn't anymore. "Are you going to keep moving?" he asks, and he can hear the way they both turn to look at him by how their voices simultaneously get louder and then stop entirely. The quiet stretches on for a second too long before Tubbo answers. "Yes," he says, and when Phil glances back, he can see the uncomfortable look on both their faces, so he doesn't pry. He just nods, shifting an arm underneath him and pushing himself off the ground. He takes a second to wipe the dirt off his butt and refills his water bottle at the creek before stowing it away. When he turns back, Phil takes a breath. He can't just leave these two on their own. They'd get themselves killed before too long, as the incident earlier indicated. He wasn't sure how long they'd been by themselves, but it certainly can't have been forever. Carefully, he adjusts the backpack on his shoulders. "I'm going that way, if you two would like some company," he says, pointing a finger in the direction he'd intended to go since he'd seen the road signs. It's not exactly north, but it's not in the complete opposite direction either. And with that, Phil heads off into the woods. Behind him, he can hear silence, then quiet talking. He can't make out words or sentences, but they seem to be discussing something or other. Three guesses as to what. Phil hears footsteps in the leaves behind him, and smiles. Tubbo and Tommy are an interesting pair. They're best friends, and have been since they were both toddlers. They'd lived in the same town, on the same street, and nearly in the same house until they were 12. When they were 12, the apocalypse had hit. Phil's known that it's been about 4 years since then, so by deduction, they're both about 16 years old. They both have impeccable survival skills, even if their instincts are a bit off sometimes. Tommy lights a fire that night in less than a minute, and Tubbo carefully takes food out of his pack while watching Phil for his reaction. He has his own stash, so he doesn't bother to ask about theirs. Over the fire and food, they talk. Tommy's loud, his voice occasionally rising to levels that make Phil wince and scan the shadows around them. Tubbo is quieter, but Tommy draws him out of whatever shell he's created for himself, and together they wreak havoc upon the conversation. A lot is talked about between the three of them, but nothing is really said. Phil doesn't find out how two 12-year-olds survived the first weeks of the world's downfall, nor does he learn how they got through the next 4 years, or who taught them how to survive so well. But he does learn that Tubbo's favorite animals are bees, that Tommy's favorite swear is pussy, and he has strong opinions about the now-deceased Queen of England. Tubbo talks to Phil about interesting magazines they'd found, how Tubbo couldn't read very well due to severe dyslexia, and how he liked numbers better anyways. He could also name 24 separate constellations, pointing them out to Phil as the night got darker and darker. Phil likes them. He realizes it as he watches Tommy shuffle in the distance, backpack under his head and blanket over his shoulders. He knows he's not asleep, and he's not going to be either. They both seem a little paranoid of the situation as it is. Phil's not entirely sure they're not going to just steal his things when he turns his back, although his brain is rejecting that possibility more and more, and he wants to stay up and watch for any of the dead besides that. Tubbo's nothing more than a dark lump on the ground, having fallen asleep after their fire had died down to nothing but embers. Phil's eyes creep to the sky. He traces his newly named constellations in his head and with his eyes. Human contact is nice. Being able to talk to real people, even if they're two 16-year-old teenage boys, is so very nice. It's been forever since he talked to real people who weren't just trying to steal or scam him out of something he had, and these two seem just as genuine and frightened as he feels. But they are two mouths to feed and clothe. They're two mouths who can hold their own in a fight, but that Phil already knows are reckless and loud. They're liabilities at the end of the day, risks to Phil's own health and safety. But being able to hear the sound of someone else alive, breathing slowly, sleeping, trusting, is almost worth it. Something shifts, and Phil's immediately on edge. "Just me," comes a voice through the dark, and he relaxes again. Tommy moves once more, shuffling in the dirt until he's sat across from Phil in the dim light. "What's up?" Phil asks after a moment, and the teen stares at him from across the way, eyes slightly narrowed, shadows casting dark spots over his face that almost seem to bruise. He looks haggard in a way that no 16-year-old ever should look, and Phil knows the circumstances are extreme, but it still aches to think he's grown up like this. "Why are you going that way?" Tommy asks after a moment, raising his hand to point in the direction Phil had earlier. "Any specific reason?" "Not particularly," Phil answers easily, knowing that this is just some sort of test by the tone of Tommy's voice. He hopes he'll pass whatever it is. "Just a direction. Why are you headed north?" "Less populated," Tommy rationalizes. And that's right, they'd explained earlier. Or had they? Phil suspects there's something more to their travels, but maybe not. Tommy's certainly not handing him information on a silver platter, decorated with gold leaf and truffles. Phil doesn't get the appeal of gold leaf anyways. Sometimes it's better to earn what you get. Maybe so. Colder, though. Less houses to squat in, Phil points out, then gestures with one heavy arm to the side. You two are welcome to come along with me for a bit if you'd like. He's not quite sure why he's offering, but he is. Might be a bit more entertaining for me with someone around to talk to. Tommy regards him with a cautious look, eyes distrustful as he bundles the blankets more around his shoulders. Phil easily returns the gaze, eyes level with Tommy's and not giving in. They sit like that for a bit, staring at each other, until Tommy turns his gaze away and glances over to where Tubbo is sleeping, on the ground, one hand outstretched just beyond the blanket, and face turned over so all they can see is a splash of dark brown hair. It almost matches the dirt in color. He's the most important thing, Tommy says, and Phil's struck by the fierceness in his tone. If I even see you glance wrong at him, at us, I'll stab you. I don't doubt it, Phil laughs a little, rubbing one hand under his eye and wiping away whatever exhaustion he can. You two have stuck this whole thing out together, yeah? Yeah. Tommy doesn't look at him, choosing instead to stare at Tubbo still. We... yeah. There's quiet for a minute, then Phil hums lightly. You don't have to tell me anything, he says, leaning back against a tree and tipping his head back against it. It's not the most comfortable position, but from here, he can look up the wide trunk and follow the shadows of the branches as they extend out and into the sky, crossing with the branches of other trees. He can hear Tommy exhale, then the shifting of blankets as he moves to go lie down by Tubbo. He's still quiet. He stays quiet, long after Phil shuts his eyes and dozes lightly, trusting himself to wake up if there's trouble. He does not wake up to trouble. He wakes up to two sleepy teenagers packing their bags, rolling up blankets and shoving them away into their packs. Phil sits up from where he's slumped slightly, staring at them as Tubbo shoves a bit of dirt over their small campfire and makes sure the embers are cold. Then, he comes over to Phil and offers a dirt-stained hand to help him up. Phil takes it. They travel together. At first, they all see it as a temporary thing. Tommy and Tubbo often discuss their plans for the future, as though they don't see Phil in it. And oftentimes, Phil does the same in his own mind. A future without the bright, happy laughter trailing behind him through a field of wildflowers, or the anxious shout that is thrown his way when his reaction time is 2 seconds off, when his gun jams and he has to discard it for an axe. Slowly, that future begins to dull in his mind. Tommy and Tubbo become an integral part of his life, just as much as the apocalypse had become. Together they walked through abandoned towns and started to carry their food in one combined backpack, as well as their other supplies. As long as they're together, they might as well share the load after all, Phil rationalizes. Tommy's shoulders are less tense around him, and he sleeps through the night more often. Tubbo's smile bright as ever as he hooks his arm through Tommy's, or holds one of Phil's sleeves from behind. They get used to each other, and sooner than later, the idea of separating is gone. Like it never existed at all.